Hello and welcome to the Leading Through Uncertainty podcast. I'm Jude Jennison, host of this podcast and founder of Leaders by Nature, a leadership and team development company. I believe that leadership is about who we are being as much as what we are doing, and that when we combine our brilliant minds with the emotional engagement from the heart, we can solve all of the world's problems. In this podcast, I interview leaders on their experiences of disruptive change and ask them how leaders can position themselves for the future. Find out what this week's leader has to say. Julie Chakravarty is the founder of Runway, a platform that facilitates employee feedback in organisations. Julie explains how Runway allows employees to voice concerns either anonymously or openly, ensuring a safe space for dialogue. She explains that the platform is predominantly used by companies undergoing change, with common themes around organisational process change. Julie also shares some shocking insights from Runway's data that show that women and people of colour are much more likely to use the platform's anonymity feature. And without Runway, many of these people silence themselves and conform. Have a listen. Hi, Julie. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Jude.
Can you tell us who you are and what you do, please?
So I'm Julie Chakravarty. I'm the founder of Runway, and I'm also a seasoned non-executive board director.
So can you tell us, first of all, what Runway is and what you do there?
Sure. So Runway is a new approach to employee listening. I launched the company about 6 years ago for people, no matter their rung on the career ladder, to feel that they could speak up at work. And today we help leaders get ahead of emerging issues through fast feedback loops, and we help them prioritize what do they need to act on and when. So for example, lots of our clients are going through a change program. Very difficult to make those succeed without an always on two-way dialogue.
And so is this, is it designed to be confidential so that people can raise issues, or is it designed to be more of a chat amongst groups and teams?
Yeah, great question. So you've got the option to post either under your own name or you can be anonymous. And what the platform does is we moderate all of those conversations so that it's a safe place for the individual, but it's also a safe place for companies. And then what the system is doing is it's directing posts to the right people to give the right response at the right time.
Okay, so what sort of companies are you finding that are adopting the platform?
So we've got a number of organizations really, typically who are going through some sort of uncertainty, some sort of change. We've got everything from sort of heavily unionized frontline worker, that kind of culture, all the way through to banks and asset managers. So a really big, diverse group of companies. Average size, I would say sort of 5,000 to 10,000, but we've got some companies much larger. We've got someone who employs sort of 60,000 people on the platform. And we've also got much smaller organizations, sort of 300 to 500 mark.
Right. And are you finding that, I mean, obviously we're here today to talk about leading through uncertainty, and you've already talked about the uncertainty of change. Are you finding that there are some common themes that are coming out of the platform?
Definitely. I mean, if you think about it, Jude, if you think about the current environment, you know, who isn't grappling with organizational change, process change, like return to office? That's huge on the platform. People struggling with new systems. So if you think about the shift to cloud, we're all being asked to use new customer tools, automation, scheduling, offshoring tools. That's really difficult for people. And that's even before all the change that companies didn't plan for, like the cost of living crisis, the war in Europe, and extreme weather events. So these are the sorts of themes that come up on pretty much every Runway.
So it's not just the organisational change that is creating the uncertainty. There's the personal change, and not necessarily personal change, but the things that are external to organisations, like the cost of living crisis that you mentioned. It's things like that that are
affecting people as well.
Definitely. And I think that's the challenge. You know, it's hard enough to push through planned change. Even there, if you think about it, companies sometimes don't appreciate the impact that planned change has on people. You know, it really impacts our work and our lives. And I think if you think about like a change curve, where we might go like grief, we might experience shock, denial and anger and many other negative emotions before we accept that change. That takes time. And then with the unplanned changes like climate change at the moment, or the cost of living crisis was the most brought up issue on any runway. These things really impact people's emotional well-being when they turn up to work.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you just brought in around grief and shock. And if you look at, you know, we're 3 years after the COVID-19 pandemic, when we first went into lockdown, more than 3 years now. And yet my sense is that so many people haven't had the space to process some of the emotions around that. We've been so busy getting on with change. Are you finding that post-pandemic there is more of that sense of grappling with change and struggling with it?
Yes. And it's interesting what you said, Jude, about the time to process. We certainly see really kind of powerful impacts on people. And I think one challenge is not every line manager knows how to demonstrate empathy. And so they might think, well, that's finished, to your point. You know, we've moved on from that. But the impacts may not have finished. So does every line manager know how to put themselves in someone else's shoes to be a great listener, to connect with emotions? And actually, lots of managers themselves are still processing some of the things that you mentioned. And so to show empathy at scale, you really need some way of creating a genuine two-way dialogue, because feelings and emotions are still running strong. Whether you lost someone directly in the pandemic, whether you're directly affected by, you know, the war in Europe or climate change, these are things that the pace of change and the intensity of the impact on us as people, it's really finding its way into the workplace. So we see lots and lots of posts around these kinds of issues.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there are so many issues that we're all grappling with at the moment: climate change, the post-pandemic, war in Europe, and then there's diversity and equity and inclusion, and the ESG that organizations are grappling with. And then I think also so many organizations are going through major transformation following the pandemic, and many are still recovering from the pandemic, particularly in certain industries like hospitality. How do businesses, do you think? I mean, obviously you're a non-exec director, and we'll come to some of your background as well in a moment, but how do you think businesses can lead change and lead through the uncertainty, knowing that businesses are grappling with this, but so is everybody else, in, you know, every employee?
Sure. So I think coming back to that point around listening, companies need to accept that all of us as individuals and as companies, we just have to be better listeners and a little bit more kind of connecting with people's raw emotions. And so I think the way that companies need to think about this is, where is that two-way dialogue happening? And a lot of companies, they'll rely on kind of older formats like a town hall or a survey, but we really need people to feel psychologically safe to express how some of these effects are impacting our work. In other words, so we can speak up without feeling judged. And I think if you can create some of those faster feedback loops as a company, then you can understand what's really going on. You can see issues at a more local, granular level. You know, you're building really a continuous drumbeat. And then you can diffuse problems while they're a spark, not a bomb. And therefore, you build trust. And I think from all of our work, we can see that it's trust that will build you the strongest culture foundation, because change is never going to stop. The pace of change won't slow. And so we've got to be listening to not just what our people are saying, but why are they feeling it? And then we've got to create a sense of action and that those people's voices really were heard and understood.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because there's so much that a business has to pay attention to, and it's no longer just here's a set of targets, and it probably never was, but it's just not about here's a set of targets, now go do, is it? It's about how we embrace employees and have empathy, as you say, and how we listen and pay attention. How do you, as a non-exec director, let me ask you a different question. As you're a non-exec director, tell me a little bit about how you came to found Runway and how you came to be a non-exec director. What are some of the things that have enabled you to have this vision?
That's a very good question. I think, you know, over an awful sort of long career, starting out in the early 90s, you know, I could see that it was very difficult for people to speak up in the workplace. If you look and sound different like me, you know, non-white, coming up as a woman in a very male-dominated industry, which was investment bank trading floors, it's not easy, actually, to challenge the status quo. You're very thoughtful around being seen to be a troublemaker. You're very thoughtful around damaging the personal brand that you will have spent decades to cultivate. And you want to be part of the in-group. So when you want to challenge the status quo, you are risking all of that in everything that you say and do. And so I think both the path to join boards in a portfolio career. So I've worked on some amazing boards, sort of FTSE 100 boards, financial services, hospitality, cyber and tech, you know, a real array of different sectors. But it's always been around, can I help a company make better decisions? You know, that's why people join boards. They want to be part of a team that really listens, really understands, and can help navigate uncertainty. You know, which company isn't going through this? So that was the journey, but recognizing that even in that journey, I was one of the very youngest non-executive directors, actually, when I started. Just thinking, how could I maybe launch my own platform to help companies better understand what people were thinking and feeling and needing? Because it's very difficult through remote working, you know, through hybrid, post-pandemic. We don't walk the floors anymore. It's very rare that you're going to have 100% of your employees back into the office. You're going to be distributed. You're going to have hybrid forms of working. And so it was just a really interesting challenge, Jude, to think about, could I build something that might really approach that problem in a different way? So that was the motivation.
And it's interesting because similar to me, I started my career working for IBM, so very male-dominated environment. I think I was one of about five women in an office of 1,500 men when I started. So very similar to you. Who were your role models when you were navigating your career?
There weren't that many that sort of looked and sounded like me, but I would say that my mum was actually my absolute rock for saying, why shouldn't you do something just because you're different? So even though she was a microbiologist, she's now retired, and my father, interestingly, was a record producer, so two completely different fields, but both of them really carved their own path. So they were always my role model for work ethic, you know, not taking no for an answer, and just having the confidence that if you think something's a good idea, it probably is. So I would say family was a hugely important role model. And then it was just looking for mentors who would be happy to help, but thinking, how do I approach them in a way that's safe for me and safe for them? And that's, to be honest, is where I got the idea for Runway, of constructive anonymity, you know, a place where you could tap the wisdom of the bigger crowd in your office environment, but not necessarily needing to put your name to every question that you asked.
I love that, because sometimes, and I think women particularly, hold themselves back because they're afraid to be a nuisance or to bother somebody who's busy. And yet what I'm hearing is there's an opportunity here for people to be able to have a voice, even if it starts off being anonymous, to have a voice and get support and be heard and to engage in that dialogue.
Well, I can back that up, Jude, because what you've said is spot on. So I love looking at our data. We've got 100,000 employees on Runway now. And what you'll find is when you give people the option of anonymity, women are 30% more likely to ask about their career than men, and 50% more about well-being. And interestingly, Jude, women, we take twice as long to type out our question on Runway when we're talking about well-being. We take 12 minutes on average. Men take 6 minutes. And when you look at this, women are writing about more complex issues. They're being really thoughtful on their language. And I think that's because as women, you know, we've been taught that we have to be thoughtful about our brand, that we mustn't be seen as rude or pushy. So women on Runway, much more thoughtful about language. But we've also seen other demographics. So for example, Gen Zs, you know, our youngest employees, they are asking 27% of their questions either after 6 p.m. or on the weekend. So they want that connectivity with their peer group, even when your office door is effectively closed. And then the biggest difference that we found in the data is colleagues of color. So colleagues of color are three times as likely to ask a question anonymously than their white counterpart. And interestingly, they get 50% more answers back when they are anonymous than if they reveal their name. Whereas if a white person was asking a question, it doesn't make any difference at all whether they're anonymous or if you know their name. What do you think about that, Jude?
Goodness, I'm shocked, and I'm trying to soak that in terms of what does that mean? What do you, you know, as an Asian woman, what do you think that means? Because I'm trying to process that as a white woman, and it makes no sense to me.
It's a great question, isn't it? And I can't be certain, but I suspect, knowing that we work with really progressive and very, you know, very much inclusive organizations, what I think it means is that people are tiptoeing about on eggshells. And I wonder if there is a subconscious or even a conscious bias at work that says, I don't want to be seen as patronizing. You know, some men will be nervous to be accused of mansplaining. Mm-hmm. In the same way, perhaps a white person sees a brown or black face and thinks, do I really want to be patronizing or saying something or white-splaining or just doing something that isn't going to go down well? And so perhaps they shy back from leaning into those conversations when actually the person asking the question just wants the answer. I think that's what it is. And that's why if we can take away the barrier of what do I look like? You know, what color am I? What gender am I? Why is that relevant anyway to my question if I just want to grow my career in your company? And so that's what I think is going on, but would love your reaction.
Well, I just feel my heart racing. that's my honest reaction is that. So let me just read this back to you, because I think what I heard you say was that people of color, when they post a question anonymously, they get 50% more responses.
Than if they had posted under their own name.
Under their own name. So what I'm hearing is there's fear in engaging around people of color.
Yeah, maybe it's a hesitancy. I don't know if, maybe there is some fear, but there's certainly a hesitancy. There's a barrier. There is something going on. And by the way, it's not just if it's a question to do with race, it's any question.
Yeah.
You know, it could be just a facilities question, or it could be a culture question or a wellness question. But that's why we often find organizations who are really thoughtful about how am I going to get through change change program, a merger and acquisition. Again, we talked about new systems, new processes. How am I going to get through that in a way that brings everybody with me? That's where we found a tool like this that just takes away that kind of unnecessary barrier, really, because it clearly is a barrier according to the data.
Mm.
How can we do it? And I think what companies have tried before and it isn't working. So what companies have tried to do to bring everybody with them, they've often relied on, if you think about broadcast top-down emails, you know, that come from companies. And what's happening is people are tuning out from those.
Mm.
You just see that companies are saying, why didn't somebody hear what I said in my weekly email? I mean, they're tuning them out. The other tool that they've previously relied on is, you know, these big engagement surveys where questions are set by management. They're not very personal, are they? They're not going to catch an individual perspective, someone's individual lived experience. And it's quite interesting when you look at the data, quite a lot of fatigue has set in around kind of surveys. And so there was a piece you might have seen, Jude, from MIT Sloan. It found that as survey participants, more and more of us are switching to autopilot, and 3/4 of us will answer pretty much every question with the same letter option, even when the answer meaning has changed. And MIT Sloan have looked at this and they thought, actually, people are going on to autopilot. And then it's not really easy for management to show that they're doing anything with that survey because it takes weeks to process. So I think some of the tools and formats that companies have relied on to bring everybody with them, like an engagement survey, they're actually becoming disengaging. Mm. And so we're going to have to think about new approaches that bring our quieter voices with us as well.
Well, and I think what you're also talking to is it doesn't matter which of those, whether it's a broadcast email or a town hall, that's a pushing information down, and your surveys are pulling information, but in response to a set questions. What you're talking about here is dialogue, which is the thing that is missing so much, because when we're in a hurry, listening is one of the things that people forget to do.
Completely right. They either forget to do it or they may not know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, and I know, you know, you do a lot of work with this, but it's not always easy for people to demonstrate that I have heard you. You know, I'm going to put my device down. I'm going to give you my absolute full attention. And I'm going to not even be afraid of silence. We're going to have a different kind of conversation. And I think some people struggle to do that one-on-one, never mind try and recreate that at scale.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's so fascinating to me that some of the basic skills, and you've talked about them, listening and trust, that they're such basic skills. And if you ask anybody, they'll say, yes, I'm a good listener, and yes, I trust. But they're skills that require us to go deeper and deeper and deeper, aren't they? And coming back to leading through uncertainty, how do we get organizations to create the space for these things, for empathy, for listening, for building trust, when we're working in fast, and you've worked in these fast-paced environments where we're always on, where everybody has got too much workload, not enough hours in the day to do it? How do we create the space for reflection, for dialogue and listening?
Well, that's a great question. I think it needs to start with an acknowledgement of why does that matter? And one of the best sort of visuals that I've ever seen is if you imagine a picture of an iceberg, and you might want to look up, there's a piece of work by Sidney Yoshida called The Iceberg of Ignorance. And he produced this amazing research back in the 80s, actually, showing that in most organizations, leaders only understand the tip of the iceberg, 4% of what's really going on at the front line, 4% gets back up to leaders that they can see on the surface. 96% is going on under the surface. And if you think about it as a leadership team, that's a really dangerous place to be, isn't it? Mm. It means you have a huge information gap. And so if you step back and you think, well, hang on a second, that means we're making decisions on kind of partial, maybe out of date data, maybe on anecdotes, right? The squeaky wheel kind of gets the oil. That's not the way that we should be making decisions. And so I think the first step is just to understand what you don't know and understand that you've got to have this real-time mechanism of this genuine dialogue, because otherwise, how can you even adapt your messaging or your narrative in real time as it's landing? You know, you can't. You're actually flying blind. And what will happen is your initiatives will stall. You won't bring people with you. They'll leave and you just won't know why. And back to those quieter voices, you're certainly not going to take them with you because they're not feeling that they're necessarily able to tell you what it is you need to know. And I think once people accept that, they can then be much more thoughtful and creative as to the tools that they bring in to enable this two-way dialogue at scale, but also to think about their values. And if their values are genuinely things like impact and ownership and, you know, the sorts of values that companies, most of us have, we've got to think, well, how do I actually make that come alive for every individual? And I'm going to have to invest in properly training my managers on how to really have these conversations.
Wow, there's a lot there, Julie. There's so much richness in what you're speaking to. And you know, one of the first things, going back to the iceberg of ignorance, what you're speaking to there is that, you know, if we're only aware of 4%, then it's about understanding the different perspectives, isn't it? And one of the things I always say is that resistance is positive, because resistance is feedback and it's information. It's the quiet voices that or the ones who are not bringing their voice in that are part of that 96%, that what I'm hearing is Runway is creating an avenue for them to have a voice in a way that feels safe.
Correct. You've put it perfectly.
So how do we encourage, how do we encourage everyone to use Runway? I'm sure you've got some ideas on that.
Totally. I mean, one thing is just have a look and see how organizations are using it. And you can go to runway.com or you can follow me on LinkedIn and just think about the art of the possible for your company. Because a lot of us, Jude, I think, are afraid that, look, if I hear these voices, what if there's something in there that is negative? What if there's something in there that I don't know how to answer? But actually, if these questions are on everyone's lips, we've got to hear them. You know, It's one thing to say my door is always open. It's another to be sure that people have got the personal courage to walk through it. Yeah. So we've just got to accept that if someone has a doubt, if someone has a concern in your company, they're probably not the only one. But if you can create a safe space, you know, safe for your employees, but safe for you as a company. And so, you know, we use constructive anonymity, sort of full moderation. And importantly, utilizing technology to be smart, to prioritize for you, which of those questions do you really need to answer and why? Which are the ones that are going to have really high impact that maybe thousands of your colleagues and workers are clicking into that question, and perhaps they're all in the north and they're all middle grades? You've got to have that data to hand such that you can prioritize and tackle root causes. And so I think, you know, if you're ready to think about that journey, the prize is huge, because as you know, Jude, you know, you cannot over communicate if you do it with empathy. And if you can find a way to always be listening and responding, even at scale, well, that's how you're going to create real impact.
Yeah. And what I love is the way that you're using technology to enable people to be more human, because I think so often technology takes away from our humanity. I'm really passionate about wanting us to use technology in a way that enables us to have more conversation and more dialogue. And, you know, knowing that you can never replace face-to-face and actually physically being in the same room with somebody, but actually we also need to boost that with technological conversation as well. I just want to switch tack slightly, because one of the things that I'm seeing a lot of at the moment is, given that what we're talking about is the need to have dialogue and the need to listen, and we've also touched on some of the, you know, the external issues that everybody's grappling with, but as well as business transformation, one of the things that I'm noticing a lot more is that there are so many people who have so much uncertainty that they're hanging on with their fingernails and trying to create some level of control in their lives. And I wonder what your take would be on control and uncertainty. So I know that's a big question, but it's just coming to me as we're talking.
I mean, we can't control. Sorry, Jude. Jude, are we going to be able to go back on that? My daughter left a phone in here, which is not mine, and it rang.
That's okay.
Sorry, let me just.
Yeah, I can't remember the question, but if you just answer it, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Sorry, I'm just going to turn this off. I did not know that this was here. Okay, so are you happy for me just to start talking about control?
Yes, yeah.
So control is a really, really interesting theme, isn't it? Because as parents, as employers, as community members, as politicians, you know, all of these different stakeholders want control. None of them are going to get control. If you look at the world that we're living in, and we talked before about change that is planned, so much of the issues that are impacting, you know, the users that we support on the Runway platform, they are all outside our control.
Mm.
And just this morning, you know, there was a post around a road's on fire. You know, that headline is incredibly triggering, actually, for many, many people.
Mm.
The war in Europe, the cost of living crisis, these are outside anybody's control. And so I think we need to really reframe our thought process to not think about what we can control, but to think about how can we adapt. And so as companies, when we do fire drills, and if you're in a regulated company, especially if you work, you know, on a bank board, you have to do a lot of fire drills. You know, what will you do if there's a run on in savings? You know, what will you do if you have a huge capital event? What will you do if there's a major operational incident? You know, what will you do if you have a cyber hack? So all you can really do is prepare for a crisis. You're never going to be able to control what happens to you, but you should and must be able to control what will you do? How will you act? How will you react? How are you going to communicate with people when your systems are down? Who is the right person, you know, to be speaking to the media, to be speaking to colleagues? How are you going to support colleagues in all of your different offices, many of whom will be at home, if there is, you know, a major event, a physical event? So I think that's not only incredibly important to make sure that you're doing your best by your people and your customers, but it gives you a feeling, Jude, of control, because you think, okay, I don't know what the future holds, but I do know I've done my absolute best to make sure that we can adapt, that we can communicate, and that we can support. And I think that's where our focus should be. And what else could we be doing?
Yeah, and listening is such a key part of that, isn't it? Because quite often in those moments where we feel out of control, there is a tendency to grab control and stop listening and start telling. And what I'm hearing from you is we are leading through uncertainty, huge amounts of uncertainty, and dialogue and listening and empathy are at the core of how we bring employees with us, how we engage, and how we make sure that we deliver the business results we want to deliver in a way that enhances the worker experience as well as the business.
Spot on.
Julie, it's been absolutely incredible to talk to you today. I could talk to you for hours and hours, and I hope we'll continue the conversation outside of the podcast. So it leaves me for now just to say thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jude.
If organisations really want to lead change, be inclusive and engage their employees, they need to provide an opportunity for people of colour in particular to engage anonymously so their concerns are heard, understood and included. Otherwise, minority groups continue to conform. I was especially struck by Julie saying, "It's one thing to say my door is open. It's another to be sure that people have the personal courage to walk through it." How are you creating a safe space for employees to engage fully and honestly without fear of blame or judgment? And how do you ensure that everyone has the courage to articulate what's important to them in the workplace so we create change that's truly inclusive?
That's it for this podcast. I was your host, Jude Jennison, founder of Leaders by Nature, a leadership and team development company specialising in non-verbal behavioural change in leaders and teams. You can find out more about how I help leaders and teams communicate more effectively through change on my website, judejennison.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn. For now, keep leading, and I'll be back soon with another interview on leading through uncertainty.